Welcome to the deep dive. Look, we all know information overload is, well, it's real.
It really is.
We're here to cut through all that noise, you know,
yeah.
Get you those essential insights, the aha moments you really need.
Yeah, the core stuff.
And today, we're diving headfirst into something huge, a real game changer for intelligent systems. Edge AI.
Exciting topic.
Definitely.
Holly.
For anyone just jumping in, edge AI basically means bringing machine learning, the smarts, directly onto devices.
Right out at the edge of the network.
Exactly. Think smart industrial sensors, maybe safety detection right on your phone, that kind of thing.
So much potential there.
It's genuinely revolutionary. Faster decisions, much better privacy, and less reliance on those giant cloud data centers.
Huge benefits, but.
But, yeah. Our sources are pointing to this critical, often kind of overlooked barrier to getting these edge projects working right.
And that barrier.
It's data, plain old data.
It's absolutely foundational. You know, while all the buzz, all the hype often focuses on these amazing new model architectures or like the super fast hardware.
Yeah, the shiny stuff.
Exactly. Our sources make it really clear that the real bottlenecks, the things that quietly sabotage projects, they often stem from upstream data issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's really where things can just, well, unravel before you even notice.
Silent saboteur.
Yeah.
I like that description. It feels right.
It fits, unfortunately.
Because it is often silent, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how do you even start to, you know, spot it before it completely derails your project?
That's the key question.
So our mission for this deep dive is to unpack these core data challenges for building ML on edge devices.
Yep.
We'll use real-world examples from the material we looked at, trying to make these complex issues clear and relatable for you.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's unpack this.
All right.
So imagine you're trying to build this perfect edge AI system. You've got the fancy hardware, the algorithms, the grand vision.
You're all set, you think.
Right. But our sources show it's definitely not a straight path. It's more like navigating a minefield.
Ah, yeah, that's a good analogy.
And almost every single mine seems to be planted by data somehow.
It often feels that way.
Let's start right at the beginning then.
Yeah.
Just getting your hands on the right data.
Okay. Well, what's truly fascinating here, and maybe a bit counterintuitive for some folks, is this challenge of collecting truly representative data.
Representative.
Meaning the data you train your models on absolutely has to reflect the actual conditions where the device will end up living.
Not just some clean lab environment.
Exactly. Not the pristine, perfectly controlled lab setup. Because the real world is messy, right?
Rightly messy.
And the paradox is, if you try too hard to make your training data perfectly clean and neat,
you're making it useless.
You can actually make it useless for the real messy world it needs to work in.
Wow. Okay, so if collecting representative data is so critical, how often do teams actually get that wrong? Like, can you give us a concrete example where it really backfired?
Oh, it's incredibly common. Take that classic fall detection model example. Lots of teams try to build these.
Right. For healthcare assisted living.
Yeah. So you train it in a perfectly lit office, controlled environment, maybe using actors.
Makes sense. Seems safe, repeatable.
Exactly. But then you go deploy it in, say, a dimly lit care facility.
Okay.
Where the viewing angles are totally different. The lighting's poor. There are shadows everywhere. Maybe furniture gets moved.
And the model just fails.
And suddenly, yeah, it's unreliable. It misses real falls or triggers false alarms. And it's not because the core AI model is inherently bad.
It's the data mismatch.
It's because the training data simply doesn't match the deployment context. It seems almost obvious when you point it out, but it gets missed constantly.
Okay, so even if you nail the environment for data collection, there's another sneaky factor. The hardware itself, right?
Yeah.
The sensors.
Absolutely. This brings us neatly to the issue of sensor variability.
Variability.
Yeah, just think about it. Differences in the sensor type, how it's physically placed on a machine or device, or even tiny, tiny calibration differences.
That's stuff you might not even think about.
Right, and all that can severely impact the consistency of the data you get. The signals from one sensor might look completely different from another, even if they're supposedly measuring the exact same thing.
That's fascinating and a bit scary if you're building these things. Can you give me an example, like a real-world gotcha that illustrates how quickly that variability can mess things up?
Sure. Consider a vibration anomaly detector. Yes. Pretty common in industry.
Right, for predicting machine failures.
Exactly. So you build one, train it on data from one specific brand of motor in your factory. Let's say motor brand X.
Okay.
And it works beautifully. It detects these tiny changes in vibration patterns that signal, you know, an upcoming bearing failure or something.
Yeah.
Saves you downtime. Great.
Awesome. Project success.
Seems like it. But then you try to use that same model on another motor. Maybe it's brand Y, or there's an older model of brand X, or it's mounted slightly differently.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's either crying wolf constantly, triggering false alarms, or worse, it completely misses critical issues it should have caught.
Why though? Just because the motor's different?
Because the sensors on those different motors, or even just how they're mounted, introduce these subtle vibration variations that the original model simply wasn't trained to handle. It learned the normal for motor X, not for motor Y.
Okay. So let's say you've wrestled with getting accurate, consistent data. You've navigated sensor variability. Now you have this pile of data.
Yeah, a big pile.
But machines don't just understand it automatically, do they? It often needs a human touch. A lot of it.
Oh, far from automatic. This is where you hit the wall. Labeling is expensive and slow.
Right. Putting the tags on the data saying, this is normal, this is a failure, this is a cat.
Exactly. Manually annotating all that raw sensor data or identifying specific events within it takes a significant amount of time. And worse, often it demands highly specialized domain expertise.
Yeah, you can't just crowdsource everything.
Not for complex industrial tasks, no. And the real cost isn't just the hourly rate of the labeler, it's the massive bottleneck it creates in your whole development cycle.
Hmm.
Everything grinds to a halt, waiting for labels.
You really can't just hand it off to anyone. Like labeling specific machine fault states, say for a complex piece of manufacturing equipment.
Right.
That needs an expert engineer, someone who really understands the machine, to sit there and review hours, maybe days, of dense industrial logs or like thermal camera footage.
Yeah, painstakingly marking those critical moments.
Just to identify, okay, that's the precursor to the failure. It sounds incredibly tedious.
It is. It's painstaking, like you said.
Okay, and speaking of those critical moments, those failure events, many of the really important things we want edge AI to detect are actually super rare in the real world, aren't they?
That's a huge point. Which brings us to class imbalance.
Class imbalance sounds statistical.
It is, but the impact is very practical. When the critical events you care about, the machine failure, the security breach, the medical anomaly, are rare.
Which they often are, hopefully.
Hopefully. Your data set becomes heavily, heavily skewed towards normal cases. Just tons and tons of data showing everything working fine.
Okay, so what's the problem with that? More normal data seems good.
Well, the real kicker, the sort of paradox here, isn't just that your model struggles to learn the rare event pattern. It's that by optimizing really well for the common normal case,
yeah,
you can inadvertently build a system that becomes effectively blind to the very critical rare anomalies it was designed to detect in the first place.
Wow. So it gets good at ignoring things and ignores the important thing, too.
Exactly. It's like training a fire alarm by mostly exposing it to everyday sounds, talking, music, TVs. It gets great at filtering those out. But if you're not careful, you might find it's also learned to filter out the actual sound of a crackling fire because it was so rare in the training data.
That's a perfect and slightly terrifying analogy.
It reflects the reality. You see this constantly in predictive maintenance.
Right.
These models see thousands, maybe millions, of normal operational cycles of a machine.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
And only maybe a handful of actual failure events scattered across months or years. So the model becomes absolutely excellent at identifying normal.
But not so good at spotting, uh-oh, trouble's coming.
Precisely. It hasn't seen enough trouble to learn it well.
Okay, but the challenges don't just stop once you've trained and deployed the model, right? Because data isn't like fixed in time, the world changes.
Exactly. The world keeps spinning, and that leads us to data drift.
Drift. Like continental drift, but for data.
Huh, sort of. It refers to the input data distribution changing, sometimes subtly, sometimes significantly, after your model has been deployed into the real world.
Okay, so the data the model sees now is different from the data it was trained on.
Yes. And this drift, quietly, insidiously, degrades the model's performance over time.
Insidious. Ooh. Why insidious?
Because the model doesn't like send you an error message saying, hey, my input data looks weird now.
Right. It doesn't raise a flag.
No. It just starts getting less accurate. Maybe it makes slightly more mistakes or its confidence scores drop. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's a dramatic drop off. But it happens silently unless you're actively monitoring for it.
Can you give an example of drift?
Sure. Think about a visual inspection model deployed in a warehouse, maybe looking for defects on boxes.
Okay.
It might have been trained during the summer with bright, consistent overhead lighting.
Makes sense.
But then winter comes. The natural light changes. Maybe they switch to different artificial lighting, or they rearrange the shelves, or introduce new types of forklifts that cast different shadows.
Things that seem minor to us.
Right. To us, it's just the warehouse. But to the model, whose understanding of reality was built on that summer data, these changes can be significant. Its input distribution has drifted.
Right, it adapts poorly.
It adapts poorly because its learned patterns no longer perfectly match the new reality. It's out of sync.
Okay, let's rewind a bit then, back to the initial development phase, before you've even deployed anything. Accessing relevant data can be a massive roadblock right from the start, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. This is the problem of a lack of public data sets.
You can't just download what you need.
Often, no. Tasks at the edge are frequently so niche, so specific to a particular industry, a particular environment, maybe even a single client's unique setup, that existing general purpose open source data sets just don't apply. They're useless for your specific problem.
So it raises a really important question. How do you even start developing a solution if there's simply no pre-existing data out there for your unique problem?
Exactly. You can't just download a standard data set of faulty wind turbine gearbox vibrations if your client has custom-built turbines with unique sensor placements.
Right. Where do you begin?
You often have to build it entirely from scratch.
You really see this in some unique applications. Mm. Like, I read about a project trying to classify beehive health and activity purely based on vibration sensors placed inside the hive.
Wow, that's niche.
Super niche. And obviously, there's no standard beehive vibration data set just sitting on Kaggle waiting to be downloaded.
Definitely not.
If you're building that, you have to instrument hives, collect months of data, get beekeeping experts to label it, build the whole thing yourself.
A huge upfront effort.
Okay, and even when you do get that raw data, whether you collected it yourself or found some, it's not always immediately usable by the AI models, is it? It's not just plug and play.
No, definitely not. Pre-processing is not trivial. That's a key takeaway.
Pre-processing, meaning cleaning it up.
Cleaning, transforming, feature engineering. Raw sensor data, like raw audio waves or raw accelerometer readings, typically needs to be carefully transformed into a format that an ML model can actually learn from.
Okay.
Think about it like this. The raw data might be like a complex, messy sound wave recording.
Right.
But the AI model needs to read its sheet music. It needs the key features, the important patterns extracted.
So you need to turn the wave into something structured.
Exactly. You have to extract that unique acoustic fingerprint, maybe by converting raw audio into spectrograms, which are like visual representations of the sound frequencies over time.
Or turning time series sensor data into meaningful statistical features.
Yes. Without this crucial pre-processing step, the raw signals are often just noise to the model. It can't find the patterns.
That makes sense. Like how raw audio from a smart speaker, just the raw sound waves.
Yeah.
It absolutely must be converted into something like ML frequency, septal coefficients, MFCCs, or spectrograms before a keyword spotting model can work.
Right. That's the standard pipeline.
The model doesn't hear the raw wave. It sees the patterns in the MFCCs or the spectrogram. It needs that carefully crafted fingerprint to understand.
Precisely. That transformation is critical.
Okay, so we've got processed data, but then there's the sheer quality of the data itself, which, back in the real world, can be easily messed up.
Oh, yeah. Which leads to the problem of noisy or low-quality data.
Noise, like static.
Could be literal static or just, you know, general interference. Environmental interference, maybe electrical noise affecting sensors, artifacts from the sensor itself, or even just subtle real-world variations that corrupt the data you collect.
And the impact.
Well, it leads directly to misclassifications. If the model is trying to learn patterns from flawed, noisy input.
Do garbage in, garbage out?
Essentially, yes. It's learning bad habits. It's like trying to learn a new language from a textbook where half the words are misspelled or smudged. You're not going to become fluent.
That's a good way to put it. A concrete example might be a camera model on an assembly line looking for product defects.
Okay, visual inspection, classic edge case.
Yeah. But maybe sometimes there's motion blur because the conveyor belt speeds up unexpectedly.
Right.
Or the lighting changes slightly during the day. Or maybe just some dust gets on the camera lens.
All plausible real-world issues.
And those things, that noise, can easily cause the model to misclassify a perfectly good product as defective. Or maybe miss a real defect.
Absolutely. And you can't just dismiss it as random noise if it's happening consistently and costing money in rework or escape defects.
Right. And catching those kinds of errors or labeling errors when you're dealing with potentially massive amounts of data, that sounds incredibly difficult.
It really is. It feels like finding a needle in a haystack, doesn't it? Except the needle might look like hay and the haystack is enormous and constantly growing.
Yeah.
And that brings us to data validation complexity.
Just checking the data is okay.
Yeah, but doing it effectively at scale is hard. Just randomly spot checking for bat labels, corrupt files, or maybe data that just looks weird in these huge data sets. It's incredibly difficult without sophisticated automated tools.
We can't just eyeball millions of data points.
Exactly. And so errors can go completely unnoticed for a long time, quietly undermining your model's performance day by day. And then when you finally realize something's wrong, debugging is an absolute nightmare because you don't know where the problem originated.
The insight there, maybe, is that you need a system for validation, not just relying on a sharp eye.
Definitely. Yeah. You need automated checks, data quality monitoring built into your pipeline.
I can imagine the cautionary tale. Like, a developer spends weeks training a model, pulling their hair out because the performance is terrible.
Yeah.
Only to finally discover hours and hours of completely mislabeled data from way back caused by a simple misconfigured logging script from months ago.
Oh, that's painful just to think about.
Total facepalm moment, right?
Yeah.
And how do you even begin to fix that mess if you haven't got good validation practices in place? You might have to retrain everything.
Retrain, relabel. It can set you back weeks or months.
Okay, so we often hear this idea that AI, especially deep learning, needs massive data sets, big data, right?
That's the common narrative, yeah.
You're saying that's actually kind of a misconception, particularly at the edge.
I am. Many, many edge use cases suffer from the exact opposite problem, small data set size.
Not enough data.
Often, yes. They simply don't have the luxury of collecting thousands, let alone millions, of perfectly labeled samples. That's a common expectation in, say, web scale AI. But not at the edge.
Why not?
Because at the edge, you're often dealing with very specific, very unique situations, maybe rare events like we discussed with class imbalance or highly specialized equipment, or environments where just collecting data is inherently difficult, expensive, or time consuming.
Right. You can't just scrape the web for more examples.
Exactly. Think about a smart farming solution. Maybe it's using drones or sensors to detect crop stress or disease.
Okay.
You might only have a few hundred documented, labeled examples of specific stress events, maybe spread out across different fields, different lighting conditions, multiple growing seasons.
That doesn't sound like much to train a complex model.
It's not. It's incredibly hard to get enough diversity and enough examples to train a really robust model with such limited data. You simply don't have a million photos of sick plants readily available.
You have to work with what you've got.
You have to, which requires different techniques like data augmentation or transfer learning. But the small data set itself is a fundamental challenge.
Okay. And finally, there's a very practical physical limitation that kind of loops back into this whole data problem. It's about the edge devices themselves.
Right. And that's the limited on-device storage.
They just can't hold much data.
Exactly. Edge devices, sensors, microcontrollers, even smartphones to some extent are often resource constrained. They don't have terabytes of storage like a server does.
So what's the implication for data?
Well, it significantly limits their ability to, say, capture and store lots of raw data for later analysis, or to buffer many examples for debugging if something goes wrong in the field.
Ah, so you can't just log everything indefinitely on the device itself.
No way. You have to be really selective about what you store for how long.
Yeah.
It makes continuous learning or even just diagnosing problems much harder because you might not have the crucial data stored locally when you need it.
Right. I can picture like a remote wildlife monitoring camera sensor. It captures these amazing high-quality images of rare animals, which would be great for retraining the detection model.
Perfect data.
But maybe the device can only buffer, say, 10 images at a time before it has to upload them to the cloud via a slow satellite link, or risk overwriting the oldest ones.
It's constantly constrained.
Totally. So you might miss capturing a burst of really interesting behavior just because the buffer filled up. And that data is lost for future training or analysis.
Exactly. That storage limitation directly impacts your data strategy.
Wow. Okay. So what does this all actually mean? We've gone through, what, like 10 or 11 distinct challenges.
Feels like it.
It means we've just walked through a genuine minefield, as we said, a minefield of data challenges. From just collecting the right stuff initially.
Yeah, representativeness.
To sensor differences.
Yeah.
The sheer cost and slowness of labeling. Dealing with rare events. Data changing over time.
Data drift.
Not having public data to start with. The complexity of pre-processing. Noisy data. Validating it all. Sometimes having too little data.
Small data sets.
And even the devices not being able to store enough.
Mm.
Each one presents this significant, often kind of hidden, hurdle for making edge AI work reliably.
They're the silent saboteurs we mentioned at the start.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Quietly undermining projects that don't pay close enough attention to the data foundation.
And that's precisely the core conclusion coming out of our sources. Addressing these data challenges head on is absolutely essential if you want to build reliable, robust, and scalable edge AI solutions.
It's not optional.
No. It really hammers home the critical, maybe sometimes unglamorous, but foundational role of data in any successful AI deployment, especially at the edge, where the connection to the physical world is so direct.
And our sources, they do emphasize that the solution, or at least the starting point, has to be adopting a data-first mindset.
Right. It sounds a bit like a buzzword, maybe.
It does, but what does it mean practically? Based on what we discussed.
Well, it means thinking about these data issues from day one, not as an afterthought.
Okay.
So for representative data, it means consciously planning collection around real deployment conditions, not just the easy lab setup.
Get out of lab early.
Yeah. For labeling, it means investing in efficient tools and clear expert workflows early in the project, budgeting time and resources for it.
Don't treat it as magic.
Right. For data drift, it means building in mechanisms for continuous monitoring and potential retraining right from the architecture phase.
Plan for change.
Exactly. It's about this focus on the real-world environment during collection, implementing smart, efficient strategies, developing robust ways to validate the data continuously, and ensuring there's a really tight feedback loop between the model design and the actual context where it's going to live.
It's proactive data management, not reactive firefighting.
Perfectly put. It's about being proactive from day one.
And the payoff.
Well, by recognizing these challenges upfront and actively, proactively managing them, that's how developers and organizations can truly unlock the incredible potential of intelligent systems at the edge.
It's not just about the clever algorithm or the fast chip.
No, it's fundamentally about understanding and mastering your data in its real-world context.
Okay, so wrapping this up, given all these, you know, often hidden data challenges we've unpacked,
yeah.
Here's a thought to leave you with. Where do you think the next major aha moment, the next big breakthrough in edge AI is most likely to come from? Will it be another hardware leap, a revolutionary new algorithm? Or could it simply be a much smarter, more integrated, more data-first way of handling all these data complexities we just talked about?
That's a great question. Where's the biggest leverage point now?
Yeah. And maybe think about what kind of data-first mindset could you apply maybe in your own field, your work, or even just your own curiosities about how AI meets the real world.
Food for thought.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today.
Pleasure to be here.
Keep exploring, keep questioning the complexities of technology, and always remember that critical, foundational role of data in shaping our increasingly intelligent future.